Dragnet.
The Jack Benny Program.
I'm that man. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
George Burns and Gracie Allen.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum.
We offer you Escape.
Our Miss Brooks.
Suspense.
Richard Diamond, Private Detective.
Fibber McGee and Molly.
The Great Gildersleeve.
Yeah. Radio Theater.
In the air.
Dedicated to man's imagination, the theater of the mind.
You know what our call letters WGN stand for, don't you?
WGN Radio Theater.
The special three-hour presentation.
With Carl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, about 6 minutes after 11 p.m. here on a Sunday. This is program 198 of the WGN Radio Theater. It's July 16th, and to my right is the very vivacious and effervescent, and I gotta say, Lisa, very dimply.
Yes,
Lisa
Wolf. It comes by that naturally.
She has the deepest dimples.
See all that
smiling? I have ever seen.
They just get deeper and deeper.
I know. I think
right?
as
Too much
you
smiling, huh?
I think as you get. Older? Yeah. As you hit your 30s now,
yeah.
It's getting dimplier.
What's going to happen?
I don't know.
In the future.
And then in the booth is Shante Garth, our producer. Up in the newsroom is Roger Badish. And then in the traffic hut is the great Susan Burkus. And we have a really big shoe, as Ed Sullivan would say. We have the Jack Benny program to start things off. Then it's Jeff Regan Investigator. And then the Weird Circle, and it's all brought to you by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow!
This actor stars in the upcoming film Nomis about U.S. law enforcement who succeed in catching a notorious online predator. And the winner gets a $25 gift certificate for Lou Malnati's, the best deep dish pizza ever.
I could go for a big old slice of spinach Lou Malnati's right now.
Me too.
All right, so 312-981-7200 is the number to call. Now, here's a hint. This actor played Nigel in The Devil Wears Prada.
All right, everyone, gird your loins.
All right, gird your loins. 312-981-7200. We'll find our Lou Malnati's pizza winner after these words.
This is the WGN Radio Theater show number 198.
Wow.
Wow, is right.
That's a lot of shows to put up with me.
That's what I was thinking. I think I deserve a gift or some kind of a present.
All right, I'll give you another 198. How's that?
Perfect. We're playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's play it again.
All right, everyone, gird your loins.
Gird those loins,
and that's
Lisa.
That's all you got. We're going to talk to Jamie. Hi, Jamie.
Hi.
How you doing?
Good.
Good. Who is that actor?
That is Stanley Tucci.
Stanley Tucci is right. Did you see The Devil Wears Prada? Did you see him in that movie?
Yes, I love that movie.
He's so funny. Well, it was great. He did great. It's such a different role for him. You are a winner. You've won a Lou Malnati's gift certificate for $25. Lou Malnati's, home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza and my favorite. You can find one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations or order online at loumalnatis.com. Thanks a lot for calling in and starting off the show for us.
Thanks. Anything for Stanley.
There you go. Take care.
Thanks, Jamie. Lisa, years ago, before I didn't know what I wanted to do for my career, I dabbled in acting. You know that, right?
Yes.
Dabbled in some acting and actually booked a role in a movie with Stanley Tucci, and it shot in Rome. So I flew out to Rome to be in a movie with Stanley Tucci, and I had a role. I was a priest in the movie. Did you know this?
I did.
What the name of the movie is?
What?
The name of the movie was The 18th Angel. And it actually was the first movie. It was actually written by David Seltzer, who wrote The Omen. It was a very kind of mysterious, sort of supernatural type movie.
Did it come out?
Yeah, it came out. And
are you there?
Yeah, it came out.
No, but are you in it?
Well, here's the story. So I got to know Stanley pretty well because we had seen, we had at least a couple scenes together. And then he was great to be with and go out and kind of party in Rome with. He's a wild man. He really is he likes to have fun.
Right.
He had a lot of fun. But the director, You know, he told me I did a good job. You know, I shot my scenes and I got to see him in the dailies and all that. But then the movie came out and I was cut out.
Yeah.
I was cut out of the film.
So are you still like brooding about that?
I have a sore spot from it. I can see that in your face. Now, his explanation for
the
me yeah, being mm-hmm. cut out of the film
right.
was that the movie ran too long.
I'm sure he was just being
and
nice.
So he picked you to chop off. Well, no, I had a couple scenes, and unfortunately, my scenes here's the true story. Mm-hmm. So my scenes sort of set up a whole part of the movie. Okay, like it was like this priest thing, and it took they said it took too long, and they were able to make it like five to six minutes shorter by showing newspaper clippings.
Okay.
So my whole storyline got told in like 30 seconds of newspaper clippings.
Right.
So here I was in Rome for like 2 weeks shooting this film.
And you're on the cutting room floor.
And I'm on, literally on the cutting room floor.
Well, you know what? It's time to get over it.
So I'm not over it.
I know. I can see you're a little
frustrated. 20 years later. No, it's not 20. I think that movie came out maybe 15 years ago.
All right, well, it's time to move forward.
All right, well, I'm going to move forward by playing a Jack Benny program right now.
Good.
But first, I want to give everyone our text in line, 312-981-7200. Text in. We love hearing from our listeners. And, you know, yesterday we asked our listeners to text in about drinks that they drank as kids. You know what I want to ask our listeners about? Toys. Your favorite toys as a kid.
Well, just last night after our show, I don't know if you heard Dave Player when you were on your way home. He was talking about Light Bright.
Light Bright, for example. I remember Light Bright.
Light Bright is an amazing toy.
Yeah, I remember
and
that.
And Battleship.
Sure.
I know there's new improved ones now, but
you
I mean,
sunk my Battleship.
Yeah, but the old ones, we actually took the took the pins and put them in, not electronically, but you know, we had little pins
remember
and you stuck
Operation?
Them in the boat. I still have that.
Oh, wow.
Operation. I have that.
All right, so folks, text us in your favorite toys in the 1960s, maybe even 50s, 50s and 60s,
right.
even into the 70s. I want to know your favorite toys. We'll write them down and we'll talk about them later. I'm going to write down a couple of my favorite toys.
I've got
toys.
A few favorites up
All right?
my sleeve
so
as well.
So let's do that. That'll be a lot of fun. But it's time now for the Jack Benny program. Let's go back to December 10th, 1950. His special guest is Eddie Cantor, part one of the Jack Benny program.
The Jack Benny program. From Palm Springs, California, starring Jack Benny with Mary Livingston, Phil Harris, Ross Chester, Dennis Day, and yours truly, Don Wilson. Ladies and gentlemen, this week Jack Benny is in Palm Springs for the sole purpose of fun and relaxation. Every morning he can be seen playing golf at the O'Donnell Golf Course.
Yesterday I was 2 under par.
Every afternoon he can be seen playing tennis at the Biltmore.
My backhand is sensational.
And every evening he can be seen playing his violin on steak rides.
I murder them with Mexicali Rose.
And here he is, our tumbling tumbleweed, Jack Benny.
Thank you. This is Jack Benny tumbling. I mean talking. And Don, you should have seen me on that golf course yesterday. On the first hole, I had a terrible slice. But I made a terrific recovery when I sunk a 30-foot putt.
A 30-foot putt? Why, Jack, I think that's wonderful.
Well, so did I until I found out it was an open manhole. I had on bifocal glasses.
An open manhole? Well, Jack, did you get your ball back?
No, but I got Rochester watching for it at El Segundo. And you mentioned I play tennis every afternoon. You must have seen me at the Biltmore.
Oh, I did, Jack, and I want to congratulate you for finally staying at such a beautiful place.
Well, Don, I'm not exactly staying at the Biltmore. You see, I only play tennis there. I have a very comfortable room at the El Pocho Motel. It's right near...
Oh, no, not that joint.
Phil. Phil, nobody was talking to you.
I know, Jackson, but when you mentioned the El Pocho, my hair straightened and I'm a tight curl man.
Phil.
How can you stay at a crumb joint like that?
I never heard of the El Pocho, Phil. Where is it?
Well, Donji, do you know where the Desert Retreat is?
Yeah.
Well, the El Pocho is where it retreated from.
All right. Listen, the El Pocho may not be swanky, but it's comfortable. I'll admit that my room doesn't have electricity or running water.
No electricity or running water? Well, Jack, on these chilly nights, do you have heat?
No, no, but if I get in bed by 8 o'clock, it's still warm from the fellow who just got out. I think it's a fellow.
You think it's a fellow?
Well, Phil, in Palm Springs, you see, cowboy boots can belong to anybody, you think? I'll soon find out who it is. I left a note in one of the boots. They were so dainty and petite, they must belong.
Oh, hello, Jack. Hello, everybody.
Oh, hello, Mary. All right, Mary, you can sit down now. Phil, let's have a band now.
Well, wait a minute, Jackson. You didn't even give Livy a chance to do her routine. She comes in, says hello, and you push her away from the microphone.
Phil, I know what I'm doing. Let's have a band number.
Jack, you're not pushing Mary for that little mistake that she made on last week's program.
Pushing, did you? That's punishing. Nobody reads on this program. I certainly am punishing Mary.
Now, wait a minute. What did our little Livy do?
I'll tell you what she did, Phil. It happened after you left to do your own show. You remember that part last Sunday when I ran my car into a gas station and hit another car while it was up on a grease rack?
Yeah.
Well, at the very end of the program, Mary was supposed to say to me, Jack, how could you possibly hit a car that was up on a grease rack? That's all she was supposed to say. How could you possibly hit a car that was up on a grease rack?
Well, what did she say?
Phil, if I told you the mistake she made, you wouldn't believe me, so I brought a record along. Fellas, put that record on, the one I gave you last week's show. Now listen to this, Phil.
Well, Mary, I think the way I've got the interview is all right. I think people will be interested in the way I found Rochester.
Well, I think so, but Jack, how could you have possibly hit his car while it was up in the grass rack?
Fellas, that's enough. That's enough. How do you like that? Grass reek. What kind of a word is that?
Oh, Jack, anybody can make
it. Mary, get away from the microphone.
But Jack.
Don't but Jack me. Just when I'm getting over Chis Swee Sandwich, you come up with a new one.
Don't worry about it. Cheer up, Livy. So you made a little mistake. Next week, before we go on the air, I will personally go over the script with you.
Please, Phil, I'm in enough trouble.
Yeah, Luca's going to show her how to read. Phil, you can't even write your own name.
So what?
So what? What do you do when you have to sign a check?
The same as you. I take a little Novocaine.
Well, that's a snappy retort coming from a man whose eyes stick out like the taillights on a Greyhound bus.
Now, wait a minute, Mexicali Rose. Hold it.
What?
I don't think that was a very nice thing to say to a man who's tapering off.
Tapering off?
I certainly am tapering off. You just can't stop in midstream. You got to drag your anchor a bit, you know.
Oh, of course.
And it wasn't easy. When I got to Palm Springs last Wednesday, I made up my mind that each day I was going to drink a little less. And I stuck to it. As a matter of fact, today is my fifth day.
Really?
Yep, today I'm down to a fifth.
And you used to spill that much. I should have known. Phil, why don't... Come in. Oh, it's you, Dennis.
Hello.
Well, Dennis, are you enjoying yourself?
Yeah, it sure is exciting here in Las Vegas.
Las Vegas?
Dennis, you're not...
Hold it, Don, hold it. Dennis, you're in Las Vegas?
Yeah. Well, say, Mr. Benny, would you give me a dollar's worth of nickels?
What do you want nickels for?
Well, I've been playing those slot machines, and one of them is bound to pay off soon.
What slot machines?
They're all over the place. They're lined up on both sides of the street.
Those are parking meters! Slot machines.
Gee, and I thought the fellow playing the one next to me won a Cadillac.
What?
With a girl in it yet.
Mary, you talk to him.
I don't have to. Fortunately, you threw me off the program.
Oh, yes. Now go over in the corner and say grease rack 50 times. Then you can come back.
Oh, all right.
Grass reek.
Say, Dennis, where are you staying down here?
Oh, I'm at the El Pocho Motel.
The El Pocho? Dennis, that's where I'm staying. What room are you in?
24.
24? I'm in that room, too.
Oh, so you're Blue Eyes.
Huh?
Gee, that was a cute note you left in my cowboy boot.
Hey, Jackson told us about that. Read us that note, kid.
Dennis.
Oh, come on now, Dennis. Read the note Jack wrote.
Okay. You and I have never met. To me, you are a stranger. But I'm carefree as a desert breeze and would like a little danger.
For him, I called in a writer. All right, Dennis, come on. Let's have your song.
Okay.
You? Hold it a minute. Come in. Well, kids, look who it is. It's Mr.
Tavoni.
Mr. Savoni, what are you doing down here in Palm Springs?
I just came down to relax.
Relax? I didn't think you had a care in the world.
Neither did I. I was enjoying life. Just sitting around the house. I wasn't doing anything. Just sitting around the house. I didn't feel like doing anything. Just sitting around the house. After a while, it made me so nervous,
eh?
So I went to see my doctor.
Oh, so the doctor sent you to Palm Springs to rest?
Yeah. He said, John, most people can't take too much of the desert, but you can stay out in the hot sun as long as you want. It won't even hurt you a bit.
But, Mr. Savoni, I didn't think you had enough money to come to Palm Springs. But here you are. You even have a new suit on. Where are you living?
At Bullock.
Bullock? That's a department store.
I don't care what it is. They're very proud of me.
Proud of you at Bullock's?
Yeah. I was just standing around. The doctor told me to relax, so I wasn't even moving a muscle.
Uh-huh.
All of a sudden, a guy come over, put the suit on me, picked me up, put my hand on my hip, and stuck me in a window.
In the window?
So I gotta go now, Mr. Benny. I'm getting married this afternoon.
No.
Yeah! While I was standing there all dressed up in this new suit, I proposed to a girl standing next to me in the window.
Now, wait a minute. Mr. Savoni, that's impossible.
No, it ain't.
Don't tell me she said yes.
She didn't say no.
Well, goodbye. Goodbye, Mr. Savoni, and good luck.
Goodbye.
All right. right. There's always laughs on the Jack Benny program, that's for sure. Mr. Sabaldi there.
I can picture him, can't you? Like, don't you just see what he looks like?
Jack Benny.
I can just see him.
December 10th, huh?
Sounds a little bit like Crazy Guggenheim.
Yeah, Guggenheim, right. Yeah,
from the
I bet you that was
show.
Him.
Yeah.
I bet you it was the same guy. Could probably be. Crazy Guggenheim, yeah. I'll tell you, you can't slip anything past Roger Badish.
Well, you can when I'm sleeping, which is most of the time. But
that's December 10th, 1950 episode of the Jack Benny program. We'll get back to it in just a few minutes, but first, these words. A little earlier in the show, we asked our listeners to text us and tell us what your favorite toys were as a kid. And boy, we've got a lot of them. We're going to name some of them. And I forgot half these toys, Lisa. When I was a kid, my favorite toy, and I'm gonna talk about some of my favorite toys. I had like three or four toys as a kid, and one of them was a G.I. Joe. I loved G.I. Joes as a kid.
I used to play with G.I. Joes.
You did?
I had two brothers.
Yeah, that's
so
true.
That's what we did.
So, folks, yeah.
You want to know one of my favorites?
Give me one.
I'll give you one.
Yeah.
Twirlo paint.
Twirlo paint.
Do you know that?
I think it was something where you put paint and you spun something and it made a mess?
It spun around really, really, really fast. And then you take the paint. And it looks like you're making this beautiful design. And it kind of squirts all over. And then you turn it off and you have a beautiful painting.
You
have a masterpiece.
That your parents go, oh, my gosh,
yeah,
Lisa.
It's just a crazy mess of colors.
Let's frame this and hang it in the living room.
They did not say that.
Well, I know.
Yeah.
You wanted them to say that, though.
You know, I'm a little older than you guys, and I had a favorite toy.
Okay.
Yeah, a stick.
A stick? That's my dog's favorite toy, too.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I love
the stick.
We
ought to get together for a play date.
Exactly.
Roger had Roger was the first guy that invented a wheel.
It was square, though. I didn't know what I was doing.
How about pickup sticks, Roger? Those are always fun.
I'm going to tell you.
Chinese checkers.
Let me tell you something.
Yeah, good one.
I'm going to tell you a story when we come back from the news about pickup sticks.
All right.
Yeah, that's a dangerous toy.
Uh-oh. Every toy can be dangerous.
I have a true story to tell you about pickup sticks.
Okay.
All right, so 312-981-7200 is our text in line. Text us what your favorite toys were back in the 50s, 60s, and 70s. We'd love to write them down and read some of them a little later in the show.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
The 11:30 news was sponsored by Lindemann Chimney Company. And thank you, Roger. And thank you, Susan. All right, we're back here. The WGN Radio Theater is our radio program that airs every Saturday and Sunday night from 11 p.m. until 2 o'clock in the morning, and my right-hand person here is Lisa Wolf. Oh, Lisa.
Oh, Carl.
So much fun doing this show with you. I love coming here.
Thank you. It's fun doing with you most of the time.
And doing the show
with you.
Most
of the time is really fun.
You know, and when Lisa and I first got together, 10 years ago maybe, to do a radio show?
Yeah.
Lisa, did you even know classic radio shows existed? Now you know all about these shows.
I sure did, but I didn't know much about it. I mean, I've heard a few, and I knew about it, but I was not an aficionado.
Now you, I would say you're borderline expert.
Well,
on
you know, I'm working my way up.
And I'll tell you what, Roger Badish knows these old-time radio shows.
Yeah, he's a pro.
I've forgotten more than I know, unfortunately.
I mean, and Roger, you weren't around when these shows were on there. You mean,
I got the back end of them.
No, you got
the back end of
you know,
some.
You probably listened. You didn't listen to them originally. You probably listened to cassettes and CDs and things of them.
Well,
like
much later on. I mean, I was born in 52, so and my folks listened to stations that carried the old-time radio show. So
reruns of them, maybe.
Well, because whatever was around in the mid-50s.
Well, yeah, but here's the deal.
Yeah.
By about 1955, these shows were gone.
Right.
They were not on the air anymore.
Yeah.
So you would have only been a couple of years old.
Yeah.
So you probably remember the early television shows, obviously.
Mm-hmm,
many
mm-hmm,
of these shows made the transition.
Sure.
And then you probably heard reruns of them, you know, on stations, broadcast.
Definitely.
But,
and then, of course, you know, CBS Radio Mystery Theater came about, I can't remember exactly, in the
70s.
70s?
70s, yeah.
Yeah, so I remember those.
Mm-hmm.
I think I mentioned I worked at a station where we carried it at midnight when I was working out in Vegas.
Yeah.
So, you know, we had to stop our music programming.
Sure.
And it was top 40 music programming, and boom, went to the network feed.
You know, that show had a great impact on me and my career, because what happened was this show the CBS Radio Mystery Theater, originally in the 70s, came back and was re-syndicated in the 80s, all right, by CBS. So CBS had like, maybe 88 of its O&O stations, mm-hmm. its owned and operated stations, carrying the reruns of these, right? Not originally from the 70s, but mm-hmm. When it ran again. And then in 1990, January 1st, 1990, the show was going away. So in the late 80s, like 1988, 89, they were looking for a replacement show. CBS was mm-hmm. looking for a replacement show because it was a, as you said, a staple on these stations,
sure,
right? They
sure.
would actually break into music or news, mm-hmm. right? Like
yeah.
here in Chicago, it was on WBBM.
Okay.
Right? They aired it at
the CBS station.
Yeah, it was the CBS station. KMOX, KNX in Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. And so they had all these, there was 88 stations. And the reason why I know this is because I was doing a radio show on Eastern Airlines. Okay.
Wow.
I had a show, I was playing classic radio mm-hmm. shows on Eastern Airlines. And the senior vice president of CBS heard my show and called me and said, I want to meet with you because this show, CBS Radio Mystery Theater, is going away. We couldn't renew with Hyman Brown, who was producing. We couldn't renew it. And it's going away January 1st, 1990. And we either have to fill in a show, some kind of a dramatic radio show
right.
in that time slot, or we're just going to go to news, or music.
Right.
And so I created a show with their help called When Radio Was.
And, I remember that show.
And that show,
yeah.
had Art Fleming was the original host of that show. And so December 31st, 1989 was the last CBS Radio Mystery Theater rerun to go on the air on those 88 stations. Mm-hmm. And then January 1, 1990, When Radio Was kicked off with Art Fleming.
You.
Yeah, I was the producer of it. And then, I, of course, have been doing this ever since. I started doing this in college back in 81. Mm-hmm. But so that show, the CBS Radio Mystery Theater, had a great impact on my career doing
That's
these,
fantastic.
Playing these
great
radio
story.
Broadcasts. Yeah. Thanks, yeah. Raj. All right. Well, we're listening to Jack Benny. So let's get back to it right now.
Come on, Dennis. Come on, Dennis. Let's have your song.
Yeah.
Holly green, the ivy green, the prettiest picture you've ever seen is Christmas in Killarney with all of the folks at home. It's nice to know to kiss your beau while cuddling under the mistletoe. And Santa Claus, of course, is one of the boys from home. The door is always open, the neighbors pay a call, and Father John, before he's gone, will bless the house and all. How grand it feels to click your heels and join in the fun of the jigs and reels. I'm handing you no blarneys, the likes you've never known. It's Christmas in Killarney with all of the folks at home.
The holly green, the ivy green, the prettiest picture you've ever seen is Christmas in Killarney with all of the folks at home.
There was Cousin O'Flaherty, Uncle O'Shaughnessy, Michael, me brother, and Auntie McGee, and Father and Mither were all in a dither when Terence the baby crawled under the tree.
It's nice, to kiss your beau while cuddling under the mistletoe, and Santa Claus, of course, is one of the boys from home.
T'was Paddy Delahanty who dressed up like Santa and gave out the presents like he always does, but Johnny McGee, when he sat on his knee, tried to pull off his whiskers to say who it was.
The door is always open, the neighbors pay a call,
and Father John, before he's gone, will bless the house at all.
How grand it feels to click your heels and join in the fun of the jigs and reels. I'm handing you no blarney, the likes you'll never know.
It's Christmas in Killarney with all of the folks at home.
Christmas in Killarney, sung by Dennis Day. Very good, Dennis. Your voice was wonderful.
When you wrote that poem, I'll bet you thought it was much higher.
Oh, forget it.
Jack.
What?
I said grease rack 50 times. Can I come back on the program now?
Emma, are you sure you didn't say grass reed?
Not even one.
Good, good. Sure, I'm not angry. I'll take you to dinner at the Dunes, and tomorrow morning I'll take you on a breakfast ride.
Oh, fine. Remember that last breakfast ride?
What was it, Barry?
Somebody dropped an egg. Jack saw the yolk, thought it was gold, and before we could stop him, he dug a hole 30 feet deep.
30 feet deep. That joke you had to read right. And now, ladies and gentlemen, for our feature attraction tonight, we are going to present our brand new 1950 version of Murder at the Racquet Club. Once again, I will play the part of Captain O'Betty. And Mary, you will... Oh, for heaven's sake. Come in. Yes?
Mr. Benny, I'm Gus Kettman, the Palm Springs Chief of Police.
What do you want to see me about, Chief Kettman?
It's about those sketches you do here in Palm Springs.
You mean murder at the Racquet Club?
Yes. Why must these murders always take place at the Racquet Club?
Well, we get a better class of bodies that way. But you don't object to our doing these plays, do you?
No, but it might leave the wrong impression. There's probably never been a murder at the Racquet Club.
Probably? You mean you're the chief of police and you don't know?
They won't let me in there.
No.
I wish you'd mention my name to the owner, Charlie Farrell, the star of Seventh Heaven.
I will. But why do you object to my doing murder mysteries? Don't you ever have murders here?
Very rarely. We only have minor troubles. Like this morning, we had to chase a skunk that was running around on someone's lawn.
Oh, did you finally get the skunk off the lawn?
Yes, but boy, did that grass reek.
Well, that settles it. We're going to do our sketch. And don't worry, Chief, I won't embarrass you.
But how can you be a police officer? You don't even know how to handle a gun.
What's so difficult about handling a gun?
There's a lot to it. Here, I'll show you.
Oh, wait, Chief, don't point that gun at me. It might go off.
Don't worry, it's loaded with dates.
Your gun is loaded with dates?
Whenever I get hungry, I play Russian roulette.
Oh! Well, look, Chief Kettman, you sit down and listen while we do the sketch, and I promise I won't embarrass you.
Okay.
Now, come on, let's get on with the play. Hit it, Sam! And now, ladies and gentlemen, we present our 1950 version of Murder at the Racquet Club. Or get a load of those prices. The scene opens in the office of Captain O'Benny of the Palm Springs Police Force. Curtain. Music. Hello, Palm Springs Police Station. Captain O'Benny talking. What's that? What? A dice game? Well, I'll take care of that. All right, men, put away those dice. Now, come on, line up for inspection.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
Oh, Wilson, a fine policeman you make with that bay window. Pull in your stomach. Pull in a little more. More. That's better. Now, men, today we must... Pull it in again, Wilson. Now, men, we've got to have a more efficient police force. Do you realize that in the past few years, Palm Springs has been the most popular resort in the entire country? And do you know why it's so popular?
No television.
Besides that, it's popular because the town has run so well.
I know that, Captain, and I'm doing my best to keep it clean. Why, only yesterday I closed up a nightclub that had a naughty floor show. They featured a girl dancer doing the bumps.
The bumps? And what did you say to her?
I said, get out of here with that. And don't come back no more.
Well done, O'Hara. Now, men. I'll get it. Hello, Palm Springs Police Station. Hello? Hello?
Peter Piper picked a pack of pickled peppers. Testing, testing.
Don't worry about the mistakes now. What do you want?
Well, listen, Chiefy, this is Mitzi LaRue, and I'd like to report a murder.
A murder. Who was killed?
Townsend T. Fletcher.
The rich Andy Devine.
It happened by the pool at 3 o'clock this afternoon.
3 o'clock this afternoon, eh? Was the murder man shot? Poisoned? Strangled? And how did he die?
The sun went down and he froze to death.
Wait a minute. That isn't murder.
It isn't?
No.
Are you happy now?
Yes, I'll be right over, and I want to talk to you, so you wait there.
I can't.
Why not?
Because last night, one of your cops said something to me.
What did he say?
Get out of here with that... and don't come back no more.
Never mind that. You wait there. Now I really want to see you. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Come on, men. We got to rush over to the racket club. Okay, men, here we are at the racket club. Now, where's the body?
Here I am, Chiefy.
I mean the dead one.
Gee, it was here a minute ago. It must have disappeared during the excitement.
What excitement?
A few minutes ago, a skunk ran across the lawn and hit that grease rack.
That's grass reed.
Well, make up your mind.
We'll go inside and look for the body. Come on, men.
Well, just a second, Captain O'Benny. I'm playing ping pong. Oh, boy, that's another point for me.
O'Day, who are you playing with?
Nobody. This wind is terrific.
Stop it and come inside with me. And I'll solve this murder. Little do we know... that the murder might still be here. Wilson, you take the hallway. O'Day, you look through the kitchen. Harris, you come in the bar with me.
Yes, sir.
Wait a minute. Here comes someone.
Can I help you, gentlemen?
Yes, I'm Captain O'Benny, Chief of Police. Who are you?
Oh, I'm the lifeguard here at the racket club.
Oh, well, if you were the lifeguard, you must have been at the pool when the murder took place.
Well, not necessarily. They have 26 lifeguards here.
But you only have one pool. How come you have so many lifeguards?
Well, Mr. Farrell don't let nobody drown till they pay their bill.
Oh.
That would be taking the easy way out.
Some smart answer. Now get out of here with that... Mitzi, cut that out! Now, come on, Harris. I'm going to look for the owner of this place, and I'll solve this murder. Here, this looks like the office.
Yeah, look at that sign on the door, Chief. Office of Charlie Farrell, mayor of Palm Springs, star of Seventh Heaven, owner of the Racket Club, and inventor of the $95 blue plate special.
P.S. No dessert. You wait out here, O'Harris. I'll interview this Farrell fellow. Come in. Well, it's about time.
Yes, I am.
Well, all right, Farrell. All right, Farrell, now listen to me. There was a murder committed in the club. Now, what have you got to say?
Oodly poo poo poo.
Never mind. What were you doing at the time of the murder?
I was in Hollywood all day doing retakes on Seventh Heaven.
Now, wait a minute. Seventh Heaven was made nearly 20 years ago. How come you're still doing retakes?
I've got a lousy agent.
Well, now listen, Farrell, I want this straight. What do you know about the murder?
Well, I didn't do it, I tell you. I couldn't have done it. I wouldn't have done it even if I could. I'm not the type to commit murder. I'm not a murderer, I tell you. I'm not. Believe me, I tell you, I didn't do it. I didn't really, I didn't, honest. Honest, I didn't.
Control yourself. I didn't say you did it.
I know, but I love to act.
Well, Farrell, I'm going to have to take you to the police department for questioning.
Oh, I wish you wouldn't. If I were arrested, it would be the most embarrassing thing that ever happened to me in all my 39 years.
39? How can you say you're 39? Look at your hair. It's gray.
I know, but it's mine.
Oh, yeah? Let me see the sales slip. Now, come on, Farrell. Let's go.
Wait a minute. Here comes someone who looks suspicious.
Where? Oh, yes. Hey, what are you doing here? Wait a minute, Eddie Cantor. What's the matter with you? You got no business barging in here ruining my sketch.
Well, that's the most insulting thing that's ever been said to me in all my 39 years.
You're 39?
Yeah, and so are Ida and my five kids.
When I didn't even think it would catch on like this. Play, Phil. Well, Chief Kepman, how'd you like our little sketch?
It was quite good, Jack. And on behalf of the Palm Springs Police Force, I'd like to present you with this.
Well.
Oh, Jack, what is it?
A ticket. I was double parked. Well, Eddie Cantor, I want to thank you for dropping in on my program.
That's all right, Jack. I was glad to do it.
Is there anything you'd like to say before we leave?
Yes. Good night, Ida. Good night, Marilyn. Good night, Janet. Good night, Natalie. Good night, Edna. Good night, Marjorie. Good night, Jerome.
Good night, Jerome.
I never give up.
Oh.
Be sure to hear Dennis Day in the Day in the Life of Dennis Day. The part of John L. C. Savone was played by Frankie Fontaine. Stay tuned for the Dennis Day Show, which follows immediately. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
That is the Jack Benny program. Originally broadcast on December 10th, 1950. Eddie Cantor was Jack's special guest in the program. Hope you enjoyed the Jack Benny program. Just love Jack Benny. You know, he was really the probably the most popular comedian of the golden age of radio and early television. He was amazing. All right, let's take a quick break. Then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater. I would download the app if I knew how.
I would do it for you if you remembered your ID.
I don't know my
Apple ID.
It's
a problem.
I know. I think I have it in my notes.
Well, if
my
you,
Apple
if
ID,
you
my
figure
daughter,
it out, I will download it
Rachel
for you.
Rachel put it in there. So maybe, you know.
I could help you.
I know.
Okay.
I don't know what it is. I just have this
like a block.
It's a block. Jinx.
You have to be open to change.
Yeah, I know. I'm on. I know.
You know, old dog, new tricks kind of thing. Yeah.
Well, old dog, old tricks.
We asked our very lovely listeners to text us in some of your toys. We're gonna name a few toys before the top of the hour here. Folks, we're here till 2 o'clock. We have two more classic radio shows for you in the next hour. It's Jeff Regan, Investigator, Great Detective Adventure. And then in our third hour, a good mystery with the Weird Circle. So stay with us. All right. You ready for some of these toys?
Well, yeah, I'm looking at them.
Tinker Toys.
Yes, I remember Tinker Toys.
I don't know what that is. I never played with any Tinker Toys.
You know, was a combination
and Susan, chime in.
It was a combination of like
sticks. I remember them. Yeah.
Yeah, with like round pieces. Mm-hmm. And they have little holes in the round pieces.
We actually still have some. There was an updated set my wife bought used from a neighbor that was made specifically for girls. So it had a lot of purple and pink. Mm-hmm.
See,
different colors.
That's silly. That's silly.
Well,
they shouldn't genderize.
I didn't make it. But they loved it.
They were wood, and they were a good hardy toy.
Back in the day,
but
now they're all plastic.
I know.
Yeah.
All right, let's get
All right, here's another one. Slinky. Now, I had one of those. We all had a Slinky,
right? Slinkies are still sold today.
Yeah. They are. But, I mean, I remember playing with it back.
You got to put it down. Remember the commercial, and it goes down the stairs?
Slinky, for fun. It's a wonderful toy.
Make it go down the stairs like that.
No?
No, it never really worked that well.
Slinky,
well, it depends
slinky.
On the stairs or whatever you're
for fun,
making.
It's a wonderful
it
toy.
Sure.
They worked until it got bent. You know?
Yeah, there were dog slinkies and animal slinkies.
In fact, the dog slinky was in Toy Story.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Really?
And to go back real fast, the wooden toys, the different parts, they were made here in Chicago.
Hmm.
I think they were made in Evanston originally. I think that's where the factory was.
Oh.
Tinker Toys.
Tinker Toys.
Yeah.
All right, here's another one. Mr. Potato Head.
Oh.
Still sold. Yeah. Again, Toy Story, right,
Love
Roger?
Mr. Potato Head.
Yep, another Toy Story classic.
That was a great toy.
Yeah.
You know?
And do you remember when it first came out, you had to actually have a potato.
That's right.
To use it.
And that's how it ought to be.
Right.
Mr. Potato Head.
Yeah.
None of this plastic stuff.
Well, it was plastic.
Get a real potato and we'll give you the parts.
But nowadays, the potato is a plastic piece. Yeah, right.
Right.
Yeah.
But back then, Roger's right. Back in the like 60s and 70s, you go get a potato and then you stick a nose on it and you stick the eyes on it and all
and
that.
And it was a mess.
Yeah.
Because the potatoes would squirt when you started pushing the stuff
in.
That's the fun, right? Remember?
Yeah. Gosh. Bringing back fond memories. Mm-hmm. All right.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right. It's hour two of the WGN Radio Theater, and thanks for staying up late with us, folks, on now it's Monday, Lisa. Happy Monday
thanks,
to you.
You too.
And in this hour, we have Jeff Regan, Investigator, And then in hour three, it's the Weird Circle, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. I think that was a Robert Louis Stevenson, I think, created Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. I may be wrong, but I think it was. You would know. You have three master's degrees.
I would know.
So what was it? Robert Louis Stevenson?
I'm going to check.
I'm going to check on that. All right, so we're going to have some more classic radio for you, and it's all brought to you by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actor stars as Holmes in the upcoming film Holmes and Watson, a humorous take on Arthur Conan Doyle's classic mysteries.
Really?
Yes. That'd
be interesting.
Right. It's going to feature Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson.
What do they win?
They're going to win two tickets to The Tin Woman, which is at Theater at the Center in Munster, Indiana. Great show. Great theater.
All right. 312-981-7200 is the number to call. Here's a hint. This actor was Ron Burgundy.
It's quite pungent.
Oh, yeah.
It stings the nostrils. In a good way.
That's right.
312-981-7200. Who is that actor-comedian? We'll find our winner after these words.
And we are playing Celebrity Scoop right now. Let's hear that movie clip one more time.
It's quite pungent.
Oh, yeah.
It stings the nostrils. In a good way.
Let's talk to Salvador. Hey, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing fine. About you?
Great. Great to hear from you. Do you know who that actor is? He's a funny one.
Yes, I do. It's Mr. Will Ferrell.
Mr. Will Ferrell is right. And we are thrilled to give you a pair of tickets to The Tin Woman. It's running from July 13th through August 13th at Theater at the Center, which is in Munster, Indiana. They do a great job there. It's the Chicagoland premiere, and it's a wonderful show. You can check it out and get more information at theateratthecenter.com. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Take care. It's
Thanks,
good to
Salvador.
Hear from you.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Take care. Good night. All right. It is time for Jeff Regan Investigator. And here's the interesting thing.
Interesting,
Lisa,
huh?
Yeah, about this particular episode. So as you probably know, because you are getting good about these classic mm-hmm. radio shows, this was a detective series
right.
that originally starred Jack Webb. All right. It debuted on CBS in 1948. Regan was a tough private eye, working for the L.A.-based International Detective Bureau, run by his money-grubbing boss, Anthony J. Lyon. Now, it was written by E. Jack Newman, and it had L.A.'s finest supporting cast in these shows, Jeff Chandler, Paul Frees, William Conrad. And each episode opened with, I get 10 a day plus expenses, they call me the Lion's Eye. Well, by 1949, Jack Webb was on to other things. He said, you know what, I like this, but I'm going to do Dragnet, and some of
right,
the other things
sure.
he did. And so an actor by the name of Frank Graham came in. He did a nice job with the show, and he played Reagan. And then Frank Nelson was Anthony J. Lyon. But on this particular episode, he's ill. So they had another actor come in and play the role. So this is the third guy to play the part. But it was just one episode.
Right, just to fill in.
Yeah, Paul Dubois, who was a very good supporting actor, and he does a nice job on this show. So this is a kind of a rare show because Jeff Regan, we all know Jack Webb playing Jeff Regan. We're sort of familiar with Frank Graham, but you've probably not heard Paul Dubois play the role. This is from April 26, 1950. It's called It All Comes Back to Me Now. Here's Paul Dubois substituting for Frank Graham and part one now of Jeff Regan Investigator.
My name's Regan. I work for Anthony J. Lyon Detective Bureau. They call me the Lion's Eye.
Wednesday at 9, and CBS brings you Jeff Regan Investigator, starring Paul Dubov as Regan with Frank Nelson as Anthony J. Lyon. So stand by for mystery and suspense and adventure in tonight's story titled It All Comes Back to Me Now.
She was about medium size, brunette, beautiful, and bewildered. She couldn't remember where she'd come from or where she was going. couldn't remember her own name. Just one thing she could remember. She wanted to commit murder. She was in the office of my boss, Anthony J. Lyon, that Friday morning, sitting there across the desk from him, holding onto her battered purse like it was the last thing in the world she was sure of. But the Lyon or I didn't know, she was right.
Oh, Jeffrey, come in, come in. I've been waiting for you.
Morning, Fatso, new client?
Yes, Jeffrey, I think we could call her that. Jeffrey, this is Miss...
That's a very interesting name, Fatso. My name's Regan, Miss.
How do you do, Mr. Regan?
Jeffrey, she has a terrible problem.
Somebody does.
She can't remember her name.
Please, can't you help me? I don't remember anything.
Remember how you got here to our office?
No, not anything.
From when?
From now. Except, there was a door. It said Detective Agency. I walked in.
Yes. Jeffrey, what are we going to do about Miss Smith?
Smith?
Well, we've got to call her something, haven't we?
All right, Smith.
Jeffrey, this is a matter for the police. A Bureau of Missing Persons. Surely if...
Oh, no, Mr. Lyon, please. Not the police.
What's that?
Oh, please, Mr. Regan, please don't let him call the police.
People who can't remember their names usually can't remember they shouldn't go to the police, Miss Smith.
But Oh.
Look, lady, if you don't want to go to the cops, there's got to be a reason.
Well, then look at this.
Jeffrey.
.32 caliber revolver, Smith & Wesson. Loaded except for two empty shells.
You see, Mr. Regan...
The gun's been fired, Jeffrey.
Two bullets missing. Miss Smith?
I don't know.
Hey, Jeffrey, that's settled. Did we call
Lyon, I think Miss Smith hasn't quite finished her story. The gun in her purse isn't the only reason she doesn't want to go to the police. That right, Miss Smith?
Mr. Regan, I try to remember. There was a house somewhere... A small house. I was in a room.
Go on.
No. No, I can't.
Keep trying, Miss Smith.
I was going somewhere. Alone. I wanted to see someone. I think I was on my way to kill someone.
Fatso, get some water. She's fainted.
Hey, water? Well, Jeffrey, don't just stand there. Call an ambulance.
The Lyon was right. Miss Smith wasn't just a quick faint. Her breath came in short, hushed spurts, and her pulse was a whisper. Beside her, the battered little purse had fallen open. Inside, $2.17 and a receipt for cab fare. No wallet, no identification. I picked up the receipt. It was dated that morning, Friday, and totaled $3.70. It was a Lee. I sent the Lyon with Miss Smith in the ambulance and then headed for the main office of the cab company. It took me 2 hours to get what I wanted. The receipt was for cab number 702, one of the new cars the company'd added, and it was usually driven by one Joseph Rupnik. Another hour passed, and he pulled into the cab stand out front of the main office. Joe Rupnik?
Who else?
Let's drive.
My flag is down. Where to, Mac?
Did you drive a medium-sized brunette this morning, Joe?
It'd be a pleasure.
Think. Fair complexion, good-looking, very good-looking. Carried a little black leather purse. The fare was
$3.70. $3.70, huh? You know, it's a nice fare.
What'll it buy, $3.70?
Well, let's see. $3.70 should ought to take you out to Westwood.
You got a record of your stops today. What about Westwood?
Yeah, I guess I have. Hey, Mac, what do you know? She was lovely, she was engaged, and she used my cab.
Oh, what a dish. Bewitched, bothered, and brunette. I seen her, and I'm glad.
Never mind the tone poems. Where did you pick her up?
In Westwood. Where else?
Okay, let's go there.
This is it, Mac. Right here on this corner. She was standing here. Naturally, I stopped.
Naturally.
Thanks. See you around.
No, you're welcome, but I'm staying.
Staying where?
Now look, right here, Mac. Look, you don't have to be a mind reader to spot you for a private eye, Shamus, or Gumshoe. This means the jackpot. My cab is at your service.
That's your business, Joe. Only keep your flag up.
Shouldn't worry about a thing. Besides, when else do I get a chance to check the horses at Tamforan?
Joe Rupnik pulled a racing form out of his pocket, and I looked at the place he'd pointed out. According to Joe, Miss Smith had been standing in front of a white one-story building with a two-story sign that said Parker's Service. It was an auto repair shop, a big one, the kind that specializes in foreign cars, custom sedans, and rich customers.
Mr. Parker, telephone call, Mr. Parker.
Yes, sir. What can I do for you, sir?
I'm looking for a girl. She used to work here.
Sarah? You're looking for Sarah?
About medium size, good looking.
Yeah, that's Sarah. Well, she quit yesterday. She was in here this morning to pick up her check. Me, I'm just taking her place. And it's not a bad job. Not bad at all. Mr. Parker, he's a nice guy. A very nice...
Could you give me...
pardon me just a moment, please. Parker's Service? Yeah. Yeah, just a moment, please.
Could you give me Sarah's address?
Huh?
Could you give me Sarah's address?
Well, I could check for you. You see, I'm new here and
I... Sure. By the way, what's Sarah's last name? I've forgotten.
Sarah Hansen. So you didn't know her very well, did you?
Blind date.
Oh, yeah. I understand. And she forgot to give you her address. Sure, I'll find out for you, mister. Glad to.
The girl behind the counter winked at me and went back into the office. And before I could turn around, there was somebody at my elbow. And I had that feeling you get when you know someone's staring down your neck. I turned, and I was right. Tall man, neatly dressed, business suit, about 35. Suntan that spelled 18 holes of golf on Sunday, private club, Chamber of Commerce.
I beg your pardon, sir. Did I overhear you asking for Sarah Hansen?
Maybe you did.
My name's Parker.
Mine's Regan.
I wonder if you'd be kind enough to step into my office.
Okay.
This way, Mr. Regan. You see, I happen to be particularly interested in the girl, Miss Hansen. She's unusually intelligent. Superior worker. I hated to see her leave. Here we are, Mr. Regan. Have a chair. A cigarette?
No, thanks. Let's stick to Miss Hansen.
Oh, yes, Mr. Regan. I was quite curious at your interest in Sarah Hansen. She's not the sort of girl to have many, shall we say, gentlemen friends.
Really? What sort of girl is she?
Well, more on the quiet side. Intelligent, as I've said. And not at all emotional. Sarah was a very superior
worker. Come on, Parker. I haven't got all day. A girl quit her job and you want to know why. Is that it?
Well, I'm sure
there's more to it than that. I saw four secretaries in your front office alone. One named Sarah wasn't that good.
Very well, Mr. Regan. I'm going to tell you the truth. Certain malcontents, certain vicious elements in my organization, irresponsible rumor mongers have been saying that Miss Benson and I... Well, there isn't a word of truth in it.
I'm still listening.
I'm a happily married man, Mr. Regan. You understand what rumors of this sort do to a man.
Go on.
I'm going to put a stop to it. You understand? Once and for all, I'm going...
Okay. Take it easy, Parker.
I'm sorry I lost my temper, Mr. Regan. This thing has been gnawing at me for months. That's why I finally discharged Mr. Hansen.
That's what you've been trying to say. You fired Sarah Hansen. You think that's why I'm here?
Well, yes, I...
It's just a job, Mr. Parker. We all got to make a living. Somewhere in it, a story was beginning to take shape. Parker apologized again, and I left his private office. Out front, the receptionist had Sarah Hansen's address, and I took it. When I got to the street, Joe Rupnik's cab was still sitting there.
Hop in, Mac. I'm available. You find the girl?
No, but I've got an address.
Great. I got them all lined up for tomorrow at Tamforan. Let's go.
It was past Pico on Bentley. Took us 5 minutes to pull up in front of a bungalow converted into a duplex. I left Joe with his racing form and newspaper and went up to the door that belonged to Sarah Hansen. I rang the doorbell. No answer. I knocked. Same results. The sun was sinking somewhere in the distance, and the early mist, the prelude to fog, was settling in fast. I tried the doorknob. No results. And then something told me to get inside that apartment, to get in with or without a permit, with or without a key. I walked around back until I found a window unlocked. The screen was easy, and I climbed up. My stomach scraped across the windowsill, and I was inside. Dark, dank, stale-smelling air. Something foul and disagreeable. I wanted to turn and leave and get out of the stinking apartment. But I didn't. Instead, I moved slowly along the wall in the darkness and fumbled until I hit the light switch. The lights didn't change the smell, but it told a story. Chairs upside down. Picture frame smashed to the floor. Two dishes broken in 1,000 pieces. And the sofa cushions on top of each other in a corner. The whole place turned upside down, looking like a clapboard shack after a hurricane. I moved into the living room, picking up pieces, searching for anything. And I found something. In front of the imitation fireplace on the carpet, a pool of blood.
Yeah, Joe.
Look, Mac, I think I got something important.
Be there in a minute.
Never mind. I'll climb through the window. Hey, look, Mac, I want you to take a look at this. I was reading while I was waiting for you.
Early edition of the afternoon paper.
Yeah, yeah. Look on page 2. You find it, Mac?
Yeah, I found it. I found it. Story on page 2. The body of a girl found washed up on Will Rogers State Beach, tentatively identified as Sarah Hansen.
All right, Paul Dubov doing a nice job on this Jeff Regan Investigator episode called It All Comes Back to Me Now from April 26, 1950. We'll get back to it in just a few minutes, but first these words. All right, a couple more of these toys that our listeners text in. What's a Chrissy doll? Never heard of that.
I don't know. I'm not sure. I don't know.
Maybe
that
has something
either.
To do with Three's Company.
Chrissy. I think she said it walks or something, stands up on its own. I can't
Chrissy
remember.
Chrissy doll.
We had so many.
Maybe
texting.
Susan Berkus knows what a Chrissy doll is. You know what that is,
a
Susan?
A Chrissy doll? No.
Yeah.
No. I wasn't big into dolls. I remember the Barbie Beauty Center, and I had the Bionic Woman and stuff like that.
You had the Bionic Center. Woman? I had the $6 million man.
Yeah, the Farrah head.
And oh, sure. I had that, too.
The Farrah head.
Yeah.
Well,
oh,
yeah,
wow.
You just do their hair.
I
cut it off.
Susan, I had Farrah's poster up on my
wall.
Well,
I bet you did.
Yes, I did.
The one with the red baby.
With the red.
Sure. Yeah, you better believe it. So here's so you had the Bionic Woman. I had the Bionic Man, the $6 million man. You know,
Lee Majors.
Lee Majors.
Mm-hmm.
They made a doll. And then I was a big G.I. Joe guy. Had a bunch of G.I. Joes. I liked
that
as a kid. And then do you remember this one? Stretch Armstrong. You remember Stretch Armstrong?
I do.
Yeah.
Had one. Your friend could take one of his arms, and you could take the other arm and just stretch
pull
him.
Pull the heck out of it.
You just pull that guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then he always went right back to his original shape.
And what about Spirograph?
Oh,
what's that?
I love Spirograph.
Yeah, they're like
Did
the circles.
Yeah, they're circles, and you take a pen.
Yeah.
And you put different size circles, and you go around and make really cool pictures.
What's a Mr. Machine? What's that? You ever heard of that one?
I don't know.
Mr. Machine? And how about Stratego?
That was mine. I love Stratego.
Oh, okay. Creepy Crawlers?
I don't know. You ever hear
that one, Susan?
I don't know. I mean, is that in the same category as Green Slime?
I don't know.
Remember Green Slime?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like,
sure.
Were those creepy crawlies, like, you know, something gooey like that?
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So a bunch more. We'll talk more about these. throughout the show. And, folks, if you want to text us in what your favorite toys were back in the 50s, 60s, and 70s.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Shrinky Dinks, Lisa.
Okay,
remember
having,
Shrinky Dinks?
Yeah, I just want to mention, I'm having so much fun. I know I can't text back to everybody, but please know that I am reading all of your texts. There's just so many that I can't type that fast. But I am getting so many great texts, and Carl and I are reliving our past here at Shrinky Dinks. And somebody
yeah. so
just reminded me.
Shrinky Dinks was something. It was like you draw something, and it was plastic, and then you put it in the
you
oven.
Cut it out, and you color
it. Put
it
in the oven,
and
it would shrink. But it got thicker, though. It was like smaller,
yeah.
but thicker.
And it was remember somebody just texted in, it was like a plastic face and it had little metal particles in it. Use a little red wand and you put like a mustache
a
on it or eyebrows,
mm-hmm.
little metal pieces, like,
yeah.
like little magnets in there. Everybody,
right.
they sell them at Walgreens.
And how about my sister had one of these, the Easy Bake Oven. Remember
everybody
that?
Everybody had an Easy Bake Oven.
Yeah. She would actually make stuff in there and I'd eat it.
Yeah. I don't really think it was a light bulb.
Mm-hmm.
It was just a light bulb. It was the heat from like a 60-watt light bulb.
That's it?
That's it.
Well, she used to make like little cakes and stuff.
Little brownie thingies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you remember them as being good?
No.
I don't either.
They were not good, but, you know, there was pride.
Oh, you're kidding.
There was pride.
You don't know any. Look at what I made in
my
easy
bake. It was chocolate. It's good.
You know, Susan, maybe this happened to you, and Lisa, maybe this happened to you, but here's when I was a kid. And I had I didn't have a lot of toys, but I had a Rock'em Sock'em robot. Remember that?
Oh, yeah. Wow. Rock'em Sock'em
robot. I had a Rock'em Sock'em robot. I had some G.I. Joes, and I had a Stretch Armstrong. But you know what? All of those things went into, like, they were gone. Like they were in the attic when I got a cassette tape recorder, a Radio Shack cassette tape recorder when I was about 12. That was it for me. It changed my life because I would record things, record like my voice. I'd make kind of prank calls, nothing harmful, just like, hey, did you know that your refrigerator's running? Yeah, it is. Yeah, you better go catch it. You know, that type of stuff.
Well, Carl and I were talking earlier and we realized that we both had that same experience because I got the exact
and
same
did
one.
You have the little thing that you would stick on the phone and you could tape record your phone calls?
Did you
have this, Susan, as a kid?
The tape recorder, yes, and I was very fascinated with it, like, you know,
yeah,
like
cassette
you guys.
Tape recorder.
But and we did all sorts of prank phone calling, but I didn't have the gadget that went that
for the phone.
There
for the
was
phone,
a little
yeah.
sticky
yeah.
it was like a suction cup and it would go on the phone on the earpiece of the phone, like on the outer earpiece of the phone. And then you had a little, you'd plug it into the tape recorder, and it recorded great. I mean, you could record. It was like CIA stuff.
Right. You know, I mostly use that recorder to interview people, which is crazy. I'd walk around with my little microphone and ask people questions.
Oh, Mr. Microphone.
Mr. Microphone.
Mr.
And
microphone.
Ask questions, and then you
hey, I'll be back for you later.
And you hear your voice back, and you think it doesn't sound anything like it really does, right?
Yeah.
Like, is that what I sound like?
Right. I sound so much better when I listen to myself, you know?
Right. No. Right? Like, you don't. You feel like you don't sound good when you hear yourself.
You sound terrible when I listen.
That's what I'm thinking.
No, but you would hear yourself, and then you'd listen on the recording.
And you go, it's
like a
weird.
Different person. You're like, is that me?
Right.
Right.
No.
Yeah. I think we still do that
I
today.
I think so, too.
so we're getting all kind. I had a little Batmobile, too. Like, I had the actual little tiny Batman and Robin in the Batmobile. And then somebody texted in Matchbox cars with the track. I had
right.
that, too.
Oh, yeah. Like Hot Wheels.
Oh, that was big time. Hot
with
Wheels.
With the tracks that had made
right.
circles.
And you would you just
flips.
Put these tracks all over your mm-hmm. room, and then you'd run the... Gosh,
and you hope it stayed on a little
fun.
Centrifugal force on the turns.
Yeah,
yeah,
that was a lot of fun. All right, well, we're listening to Jeff Regan, investigator. Thanks, Susan. Appreciate you. Let's get back to this right now. It's called "It All Comes Back to Me Now" with Paul Dubov. The conclusion to Jeff Regan, investigator.
Joe, the cab driver, stepped on the gas, and we headed for the police. I sat in the back seat, the folded newspaper in my lap, and tried to make sense out of a story so twisted even the principal characters no longer made sense. A girl with amnesia hires the lion and me to help her find herself. She says she remembered wanting to kill someone. She collapses, and I follow a lead to a cab driver, to a repair shop in Westwood, to the home of one Sarah Benson. That was when I read the early afternoon paper which said a girl had been found washed up on Will Rogers State Beach. Her name? Sarah Hansen. It was getting late. Streetlights turned on, traffic jamming and honking its way up Sunset. But that didn't stop Joe Rupnik from hitting 40 between the cars. We made the police station at 6:45. Okay, thanks, Joe. That does it.
What do you think, I'm leaving? Me, a sucker for a mystery? I gotta know how this comes out.
It took me 15 minutes to get to Lieutenant Candid.
Hi, Regan.
Candid, I got a couple of questions.
Yeah. Regan, I am tired to the very bottom of my large, flat feet. Let's make it tomorrow.
It can't wait.
All right, Regan. What's her name?
Listen, Candid, all I want to know is where you got your identification for Sarah Hansen.
Sarah Hansen, age 27, height 5'4", weight about 117, hair blonde, eyes brown.
Blonde.
That's what I said, wasn't it?
You fished her up off Santa Monica?
Will Rogers State Beach. We didn't find her. Some swimmers did. They called.
You weren't looking for her?
Looking. We didn't know Sarah Hansen from my friend Irma. What's eating you, Regan?
Canada, just tell me something else. Who identified the girl for you?
Only her mother and father and brother and sister, that's all.
Okay, Canada. Sorry I bothered you.
It's all right. We can't find the murder weapon. We haven't got a lead on the killer, and I got to talk to you yet.
She was shot?
2 slugs in her chest. 32s. Maybe Smith and Wesson. Gun's missing.
That part of it wasn't in the papers.
Don't we look bad enough already without making it worse? All we got on this case is a body. Even if it is a nice one.
When was she killed, Candid?
This morning, somewhere between 1 and 2 a.m., the coroner says. That isn't all.
What else?
Well, from the tire marks they found up the beach, there was another idea. We think maybe she was shot somewhere else and then driven down to the beach.
This Sarah Hansen, she worked?
Yeah, a place out in Westwood. Called Parker's Service. We'll check everyone out there. Takes time.
What about an address, Candid? Where did she live?
Well, her parents say she moved out of their place a couple of months ago. Seems they had a fight, she and the parents. She wouldn't tell them where she was moving.
They tell you anything else?
Sarah Hansen was afraid of something, they said. Had them worried. That's when the fight started. She used to get phone calls from a woman.
A woman?
Yeah, every time this woman called, Sarah would leave the phone crying. Only happened a couple of times.
Did they ever see this woman?
Nope. They were wondering if it might be another girl who worked with Sarah. You know, feud.
Only you haven't checked the employees yet.
Like I said, Regan, it takes time. Shop opens up first thing in the morning. My men will be there.
Thanks, Candid. Thanks a lot.
Hey, Regan, where do you fit in this?
Client, Candid. You know how it is.
Maybe I don't, Regan. If you know something...
I don't know anything, Candid.
You wouldn't lie to me, would you? Sarah Hansen was a good-looking dame. A real good-looking dame.
I never met her.
You sure, Regan?
I'm sure.
Okay, I'll take your word. She's a real nice-looking dame, like I said. Kind you hate to see turn up dead. You want to see her, Regan?
All right, Candid. We'll see her. Candid and I went to the morgue. We saw her. Sarah Hansen. Medium-sized, good-looking blonde. She looked nothing like the girl who'd come to the Lion's office without a memory. Yet somewhere, Sarah Hansen and Miss Smith fit together. Somewhere their lives became crossed and tangled up and then went separately again. Miss Smith's, her blank memory. Sarah Hansen's, to death. Somewhere, something made both things happen. That gave me an idea. I went upstairs to missing persons and checked every record I could find that even faintly resembled our client, Miss Smith. Nothing did. I headed outside. Joe Rupnik was still sitting in the taxi. He turned it around, and we headed for the L.A. County Hospital.
Jeffrey, there there you are.
Trouble, Fatso?
Trouble? I've been sitting here all day, wasting time and money.
How's she doing, Fatso?
Is she? Oh, Miss Smith, fine. She's doing fine. Doctor says she was merely weak from too much tension brought on by the amnesia.
Good, Lion. I think we may have something.
We may have something. You're darn right we have something. Hospital bills, doctors, nurses' bills. Every time the door opens to that girl's room, I add another $5. Jeffrey, this is ridiculous. We're not Fort Knox. How do you think the Lion Detective Agency can pay for
these
bills?
Take it easy, Fatso. Remember, it was your idea to bring Miss Smith here.
So what if it was my idea?
That's right, Lion. You call the ambulance.
Well, that's no reason why we have to pay.
Mr. Lion, I'll have to ask you not to raise your voice.
Yes, Miss Wilson. Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Lion.
Sitting here all day, wasting your time.
Oh, now, Jeffrey, after all, a man has to do something.
Sure, Fatso. You keep an eye on those nurses' bills. I'm going in to see our client.
Miss Smith was lying there, pale face made paler by the whiteness of the sheets, the white hospital walls, the clinical smell of the room. You don't have to be sick to look sick in a hospital bed.
Oh. Hello, Mr. Regan.
You remember me.
You helped me, Mr. Regan. I won't forget that.
What does the doctor say?
Oh, I'll be all right. Really, I will. It's just my mind. I can't think straight.
But you remember about the gun, the two bullets missing?
Yes. Yes, I remember about them.
Do you remember anything more?
I don't think so.
About wanting to kill someone.
Oh, Mr. Regan.
You don't remember that part of it?
The doctor says it's shock. Something happened to me. Something I wanted to forget. Made me forget everything.
Murder might do that.
Yes, I suppose it might.
Does the name Parker mean anything to you?
No.
Parker Service, Westwood?
No, Mr. Regan.
How about Sarah Hansen?
No, Mr. Regan, I don't know that name.
Sarah Hansen, the blonde, pretty blonde.
No. No, I don't remember.
She worked for Parker Service in Westwood. You were in Westwood today. Maybe
no.
At a small apartment
no,
on Bentley just
anything
past
about
Pico.
That
mean anything to you, Miss Smith?
Leave me alone. Leave me alone. Leave me alone.
Okay, thanks. Thanks anyway.
Please leave me alone. Mr. Regan, leave me alone.
Somewhere the paths of Sarah Hansen and Miss Smith crossed. Somewhere their lives were woven in and out of each other until it was so mixed up. And then it made sense. Simple, quick, easy sense. I left the hospital in a hurry. The cab was there and I got in and we drove and drove fast. First for a drugstore and a phone booth, then for Westwood.
Now that we're here, what are we doing here?
Visiting Joe.
Yeah, don't sound friendly somehow.
You sit tight. I'm going in.
Look, that house is dark. Nobody's home, Mac.
Maybe, maybe not. If I'm not out in 10 minutes, get to a phone and call the police. You got that?
Yeah. Call the cops.
It was 50 feet back from the street. Not a mansion. Not a little house. Grounds well kept, lawn neat and trimmed. I moved slowly up the walk toward the front door. The fog had settled on Westwood Village, and the soft dampness sifted under your clothes made your skin turn cold. Up ahead, the dark house, waiting. I changed my mind, moved along the side of the house toward the fireplace. That might mean den, and the den might mean proof. Around back, a patio and French doors next to the red brick. Still no sounds from the dark house. I tried the French doors. It was the den. Books, heavy leather chair, and desk. On the desk, a photograph, too dark to see. I picked up the metal frame and lit a match. It fit. The final nail in a murderer's coffin.
You like the photograph? Get your hands off your gun, Mr. Regan. That's better. Only one of us needs a gun just now.
Just you, Parker.
The photograph is almost a perfect likeness, isn't it? Beautiful woman.
But not beautiful enough for you, was that it?
Beautiful but possessive. She didn't understand me.
And Sarah Hansen did.
Jane killed her.
So that's her name, Jane Parker.
Too bad you've never met her, Mr. Regan.
I've met her, Parker. In fact, I just left her less than 30 minutes ago.
It's a lie. You've never met my...
Your wife, Jane Parker. She asked for help.
Regan, you're lying.
You tell me a better story. Where is your wife?
I don't know.
But you'd like to, wouldn't you? You'd like to know so you could see her once more, so you could see her and shut her up.
She told you.
Did you kill Sarah Hansen?
She was lying. She killed Sarah. There was a fight. Jane killed her in a jealous rage.
Then you're going to try to tell me Jane carried Sarah Hansen to her car, then took her to the beach, and then threw her body in the...
I left. I don't know what happened. It was Jane.
Jane carried a woman her size down to the ocean. Who do you think you can make believe that?
You're lying.
I'll tell you what really happened. Jane found out you were running around with another woman, Sarah Hansen. She phoned Sarah, tried to reason with her. Your wife was dumb enough to want to keep you. When Sarah wouldn't listen to reason, your wife went to see her.
You don't know what you're talking about.
She found you at Sarah Hansen's apartment on Bentley. There was a fight. You lost your temper, Parker. Only a man your size could erect the place the way it is now.
No.
You shot and killed Sarah, and the shock was too much for your wife.
No.
Her mind went blank, went completely blank, rather than remember the nightmare she'd seen.
How do you know?
How? Because I know where your wife, Jane Parker, is right now.
She didn't tell you that. She wouldn't dare tell
you. Your wife disappeared after the shooting early this morning, didn't she, Parker? You didn't know where she'd gone. That's what you really wanted to find out from me when I was at your shop this
afternoon. You're making that up.
You were afraid then and you're afraid now. Yet you didn't report to the police that your wife was missing. I checked that. You didn't want them to find her either. She could tell the real story.
Where is Jane, Mr. Regan?
You're wasting time.
Unless you tell me where my wife is, Mr. Regan, I'll put every bullet in this gun through your body.
And that still wouldn't stop your wife from talking, would it, Parker? That still wouldn't give you the answer to where she is now.
Tell me, Regan.
Go ahead. Shoot, Parker. Shoot and read the morning papers tomorrow. The headlines will tell how every cop on the West Coast is waiting to shoot you on sight.
Regan?
So you won't need that gun.
Let go!
You pulled the trigger on yourself, Parker. Too bad your aim wasn't better.
Dr. Dana. Dr. Stephen Dana.
$16 a day for a room. Your private nurse.
Hiya, Fatso.
No, don't bother me, Jeffrey. I'm very busy. A room at $16 a day.
How's our client, Lyon? She doing okay?
$16 a day. Yeah, what's that, Jeffrey?
Miss Smith, our client.
Oh, you mean Jane Parker. Oh, why didn't you say so, Jeffrey? She's much better. The doctor says it'll take time, though. Let me see now. If you take 16 and divide it by...
He thinks she'll get her memory back, Lyon.
What? Oh, yes. He thinks it's just a matter of time. Mental block, that sort of thing. Very complicated, you understand. Oh, hey, Jeffrey, it's been a long day. You must
Dr.
be tired.
I am a little. Come on, Fatso, I'll drive you home.
Me? Mm-hmm. Oh, home? No, you just run on, Jeffrey. I really couldn't leave just yet. You see, I've got it figured so the city will have to pay for the hospital expenses.
Oh, you can figure that out at home, Fatso. You look tired.
Well, no. You see, Jeffrey, I'd better stay right here where I can get the cost firsthand. That way I'll have it accurate when I charge the city. You know me, Jeffrey. Business before pleasure.
Oh, yes. Business before pleasure.
Yes. I'm not satisfied until I've completely finished the case. You look peaked, boy. You run along, get some sleep. Me? Well, I'll just sit here and work. Finish my job.
I'm all ready, Mr. Lyon, if you are. The night supervisor said it would be all right if I left early. Isn't that just grand?
Good night, Jeffrey.
Good night, Fatso.
Jeff Regan, Investigator, was written tonight by William Frug, produced and directed by Sterling Tracy, and stars Paul Dubov as Regan with Frank Nelson as Anthony J. Lyon. Original music is by Dick Arant. Jeff Regan, Investigator, is heard each week at the same time over CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
That was definitely an organ, Lisa.
Which one?
Right there, that music.
Which organ?
I don't know. Like a pipe organ. I'm pretty sure that was.
It's just an organ.
That is Jeff Regan, Investigator, April 26, 1950. It all comes back to me now. Paul Dubov substituting for a sick Frank Graham on that episode. And then you heard Frank Nelson in the cast. And you know what, Lisa? There was a guy by the name of William Frug who wrote this episode. And I had heard that name before, and I looked it up, and he was a big writer on the Twilight Zone television series, Gilligan's Island, Bewitched, Charlie's Angels. I mean, here was a guy that was like writing for hundreds of television shows.
Yeah.
And he started in radio. He wrote this particular episode right
shows
here.
Shows we all know and love. That's
I'll
for sure.
Say. All right, let's take a quick break. Then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater. All right. In our next hour, we will tune into the Weird Circle with Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. And I was right, Lisa. It was Robert Louis Stevenson is the author of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. Huh? Not bad,
no.
Right?
No.
And I don't even have...
You've got Wikipedia right in front of you.
Yeah, David Jennings yesterday
David.
said Wikipedia. That's
you
all
can't
you
do your voice like David even
no,
if
his,
you tried.
Are you kidding?
He's got
his
some
voice is so
great
much deeper
pipes
than,
there.
Let me try that. Wikipedia.
Exactly. You sound exactly like him.
I could do the news. I'll do the news.
Go ahead. Give it a shot.
No. Okay. That's all right.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Thanks, Susan, and thank you, Roger. All right. It's 8 minutes after 1 a.m. in the morning, Lisa. And we still have another hour of the WGN Radio Theater. We have the Weird Circle in this hour with Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. You'll hear the true story. Well, it wasn't a true story. It's a made-up story. But you'll have a story right from the pen of Robert Louis Stevenson, who created these characters. And it's all brought to you by Cat's Pride. Dum, dum,
dum, dum, dum, dum. It's time for Celebrity Scoop. Brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actress stars in the upcoming film Life of the Party, set on a college campus, and the rest of the plot details are still under wraps.
All right, what do they win?
They are going to win a Twilight Zone 4 CD set.
All right, the number to call, 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Here's a hint. She plays Sean Spicer on Saturday Night Live.
Let's do this. First question, Michelin Man. Oh, I'm sorry. I meant Glenn.
All right. Who is that actress? 312-981-7200. We'll find our winner after these words.
And we are back playing classic radio on the WGN Radio Theater. Now we're doing a celebrity scoop. We're going to play that one more time.
Let's do this. First question, Michelin Man. Oh, I'm sorry. I meant Glenn.
There you go. We've got Tony on the line. Hey, Tony.
Hey, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing good.
Good. Who is that actress? You know?
Melissa McCarthy.
Melissa McCarthy is the right answer. And Tony, you have won a Twilight Zone. It's a 4-CD set. And it's wonderful. We've got Hollywood celebrities as the cast. And we've got local Chicago actors as the supporting cast. They're very well done. They're hosted by Stacey Keach, produced by Carl Amari. And we hope that you will absolutely love them.
Yes, very cool. Thank you very much.
Terrific.
Welcome.
Thank
Thanks,
you.
Tony. All right, you ready, Lisa, for the Weird Circle?
Yeah, the weirder
or should
the better.
We talk about a couple more of these? What did I do with my sheet? Oh, here it is. All right, so we pickup sticks. Oh,
yeah, I was talking about that earlier with up Roger.
Sticks. This is a true story. You know what happened?
You did
when I was a
stuck
kid.
It up your nose?
Do you remember? No. Do you remember? Did you have like shag carpeting?
Very
kind of long shag carpeting.
Yes.
And when it would get a little bit used, right, it would get a little matted down in areas.
Right.
So it wasn't as springy, and it was kind of like
matted.
Yeah, matted down.
I get it.
Well, I had pickup sticks as a kid. And, you know, they're real sharp on each
yeah,
side.
Yeah, they used to be. Now
well,
they're,
used to be
they're
as a kid.
You know, plastic and rounded.
Yeah, no, these
right.
were like
they
wood
were metal.
With sharp.
They
no,
were...
no, they were wood. And
really?
So I had a pickup stick and playing with it, and I left one in
right.
the matted carpet. In
oh.
the, and my sister, Angela, stepped on it
right.
with her bare foot. It went literally through her foot.
Are you kidding?
I'll never forget. I never saw so much blood. It was
it
not good.
It went through her foot?
Went right, she stepped right on it, right through her foot.
Oh, Carl.
Yeah, and my dad took the pickup sticks, broke them all. Broke them all.
That's right.
Threw them in the garbage.
Showed you.
No more pickup sticks for you.
That's right.
Yeah.
You deserved that.
So then I had to play with my Stretch Armstrong.
Well, okay then.
And my G.I. Joes.
Or your
and my
Rock'em
Sock'em Robot.
Or your cassette recorder.
Well, this was before I had my Radio Shack cassette recorder.
Right.
Yeah, no, those were... I mean, who invented this toy for kids? Long sticks so you could poke your eye out.
They're not as sharp anymore as they used to be.
A couple more, and then we'll get into... what about Jack in the Box? Remember that?
Yeah, you turn the little...
Annie Rector sets.
Yes, of course.
Right? And Lincoln Logs.
Love Lincoln Logs.
Lincoln
right?
Logs. Remember those? Those were cool.
I'm wondering if Lisa remembers the hook latch rug like sets where you made your own like rug.
You know, Susan, what's so funny is my daughter, who is 17, just got one, and she brought it with her to camp. And
really?
It has like a little smiley face in the sun. I don't know. And it came with, you know, all the little rug pieces and the little hook. And you make it and then you can make a pillow out of it or just hang it. I'm sure she'll never finish it. But just right now, they sell those at Michael's Crafts.
Okay. So they're still out
there.
They're
still
out
there. Isn't that funny?
Yes.
Oh, my gosh.
You know what? I don't think it's still out there anymore. Maybe it is. Correct me if I'm wrong. The big wheel. Remember that? It was a giant wheel bike.
Like a plastic bike.
Yes. It was a plastic bike.
Do you think it's still out there? Everybody had a big wheel.
Yeah, but they don't have them anymore, I don't
think. Like a Mattel big wheel.
Yeah, it was a big wheel.
Yeah.
And then Jacks, you know, with the Jack and the ball.
Did you used to play Jacks, Susan?
Play Jacks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. That's a real big. That was.
You were like a professional Jacks player, right, Lisa?
In all seriousness, that's true. Like, that's all I did.
She used to go to Vegas. And
I used to go to Vegas and play Jacks and win a lot of money. That was very nice.
And then, and you know what? One of my favorite games as a kid was Battleship.
Oh, love Battleship.
Mm-hmm. And Operation. I liked Operation a lot,
too. Yeah, I still enjoy that game.
That's cool. All right, well, you know what? Our listeners, an Etch-A-Sketch. Remember Etch-A-Sketch?
Those are still around.
You know,
they're a little different. The knobs have changed, but it's still out there.
Wow, our listeners are so great. They text in so many toys. From the good old days of 1960s and 70s and 50s.
Oh, to be young and play with toys.
I remember those days. Boy, oh boy.
Yeah.
You know, and I had a, listen to this, Susan. I had a G.I. Joe, and I don't know what happened. I left it outside or something, and a car ran over it or something.
Oh, no.
And it was all kind of beat up. So my brother, Vince, he was like, hey, listen, we can doctor this thing up. Let's make it a... You know, because these were G.I. Joes. We'll make it like he was in the war. You know, he just tore all his clothes and took a lighter and kind of made it. And so he was like the patient for the other G.I. Joes.
Oh, that's creative.
So we utilized it.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
So very resourceful.
Dirtied him up a little bit, and he was the patient.
Did you have the G.I. Joes that were just like the little plastic
figurines?
No,
I had the full life size. And some of them had the little, you know, their dog tag. You could pull it and be like, this is G.I. Joe, Commander One, you know, or...
Oh, and how about that toy that you pull the thing? It says, you know, cow, see, and it goes around.
Oh,
you know what I'm talking about? You pull the string, and it's like dog, D, roof, like that.
D-O-G, roof.
Do you remember that?
I do. Why can't we think of the name of it?
It was like a farm animals, and it was
a circle.
E-I-E-I-O.
No. Somebody will text it and tell me what it's called.
And I also had a, I don't think it was mine, but somebody had a Bozo doll, Bozo, that you made, pulled the string in it, and it said stuff like, I'm Bozo the Clown, you know, or whatever,
I think you're making that up.
No, I did. Susan, there was Bozo dolls, wasn't
so.
There?
It just sounds a little scary at this, moment of the early morning.
Did you have a brother? Did you have a brother? Did he have Rock'em Sock'em Robots?
No,
remember
but
those?
I think I did.
Really?
I'm an only child, exactly. So I had Evel Knievel stuff and Barbie
Evel
stuff.
Evel Knievel, the greatest toy ever. Evel Knievel, the greatest toy of all time.
Somebody texted in to help me. It's called a See and Say.
Oh, a See and
Say.
There it is.
You hit the nail on the head, Susan. Evel Knievel. doll. Greatest toy in the history of toys.
And the car came with it. You could pull the string on the car. And
motorcycle.
Then
he had a motorcycle.
He was a guest star on Happy Days.
Yes, I was just going to say that was the big, like, day on Happy Days when the Fonz.
You know,
Lisa, my
birthday is August 20th.
I know that.
You can buy me an Evel Knievel doll. I'll still play with it. That's how much I like it.
All right. It's a deal.
All right.
I'll get off easy.
Yeah.
Good plan.
No problem.
All right. The Weird Circle. This was a great series. It was a mystery series, an anthology of classic thrillers from the pens of the world's best known and respected fiction authors of the 19th century. The focus were horror and suspense stories by Edgar Allan Poe, Robert Louis Stevenson, Mary Shelley, who wrote Frankenstein, and many others. It was produced in New York, and it had some great actors on it, including Lawson Zerbe, Jackson Beck, Lon Clark, Maurice Tarplin. We have Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. This is from March 2nd, 1945, part one now of The Weird Circle.
The Weird Circle. In this cave by the restless sea, we are met to call from out the past. Stories strange and weird. Bellkeeper, pull the bell, so all may know we are gathered again in the Weird Circle. Phantoms of a world gone by speak again the immortal tale. Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde.
Every man is truly two beings, cursed with the struggle of good and evil within him. What would this duality be like, separated? Each part living alone. The good companion, and then the pure and ugly evil of a man. That you, Poole?
Yes, Dr. Jekyll.
Then come in. Did you get the salt?
Yes, sir. Finally, sir. But only 3 pounds of it. It was all the chemist had.
Good. It will suffice. Thank you, Poole.
Anything else, sir?
Hmm? No, Poole. Good night.
I beg pardon, sir, if I may ask. Is the experiment nearly done?
I think so, Poole. This time, I think it's really nearly done.
Oh, splendid, sir. Cook will be glad to hear it, too.
Yes,
good night, sir.
Good night. Yes, Ed. A gram of salt. Where's your courage, Jekyll? Drink it. Of the hidden evil in a man, Dr. Jekyll. The miracle of consummate evil come to life. The hidden soul of Jekyll. I am Mr. Hyde.
That night, like a shadow from an evil place, a stooped figure walked alone in the London streets. About him was a feeling of deformity and decay. He had come from the by street door of Dr. Henry Jekyll's house, from his laboratory. And it was this same door he entered again when the first light of dawn dispelled the night. But during the day, the house and the laboratory were quiet, while the master slept. That evening, Mr. Utterson, the lawyer, stood before the bright fire in the library. Dr. Jekyll had sent for him.
This will is preposterous, Jekyll. I'm your lawyer,
well,
yes,
there's nothing to be so concerned about, Utterson. Edward Hyde is a new friend of mine. I want to be sure he's provided for in case something happens to me, that's all.
But nothing's going to happen to you. How could you just disappear, as you've stated in this testament?
Well, now, how could I know that, Utterson?
Well, it's strange, Jekyll, but if this is the way you want it...
Hyde has captured my interest, Utterson. His well-being is the one thing uppermost in my mind. I want to be certain, in case something does happen to me, that Hyde will be financially secure to carry on.
I see. Well, all right, Jekyll, as you wish. The will be ready for your signature in a few days. I'll bring it around myself.
Splendid, Utterson. Now, what about that spot of wine?
Thanks, no. Dr. Lanyon's expecting me.
Lanyon, huh?
He was only asking about you the other evening, Jekyll. We see you so seldom these days.
Well, I've been rather hard at it in the laboratory. Sure you can't stay.
Another time. Good night, Jekyll.
Good night.
Wonder who the devil this Edward Hyde is.
Mr. Utterson was the first of many Londoners who were to wonder about the hideous specter-like Mr. Hyde, who were to fear the shadows of night because of him. One evening, nearly a week later...
Here, young fellow. What's the matter?
It's a monster, sir. He struck me with his cane. Help me, sir, please.
There. Nobody's going to hurt you. Now, where is this monster you speak of?
He was right behind me, sir. All the way from Clement Street. Look, there, under the corner light. You'll not let him come at me again, will you, sir? Will you?
No, my lad. No harm will come to you.
Oh, sir.
He's seen us now. Wait. By George, it is a monster.
Look, sir, he's making for that doorway. The small one in the shadow, just there.
So he is. Hey, here, fellow. Wait a minute there. Come along, my lad.
But, sir, don't let him...
It's all right now. Don't be afraid. You there. Did you strike this child?
If the ruffian molests me again, I'll strike him again.
What kind of a devil are you?
There's an old gentleman but wishes to avoid a scene. It was an accident. Maybe this pound note will ease the boy's pain.
Oh, no, no.
Take it, lad.
Now, if you'll excuse me.
Wait a moment. And this door, isn't this Jekyll's laboratory? You must be Mr. Hyde. I'm an old friend of the doctor's, Utterson of Gaunt Street. You must have heard of me. I was just on my way to see Jekyll.
How did you know I'm Mr. Hyde?
Oh, we have common friends.
Who are they?
Jekyll, for one. Let me see your face, Mr. Hyde. How else shall I know you when we meet again?
We shall not meet again, Mr. Utterson.
Well, so that is Hyde. Now, my lad, run along. I've got a call to make.
In this house, sir?
Yes, but at the front door. I want to see if Mr. Jekyll's in. Now, my lad, you run along home, and don't let me catch you out on the dark streets like this again.
Yes, sir, you won't, sir. Thank you. Thank you.
Good evening, Poole.
Good evening, Mr. Utterson.
Dr. Jekyll home, Poole?
I'm afraid not, sir.
Thought sure he'd be here at this late hour.
And most gently he is, sir.
I just saw that Hyde fellow go in by the laboratory door. Is that right, when Dr. Jekyll's away from home?
Quite right, Mr. Utterson. Mr. Hyde has a key.
Your master seems to put a great deal of trust in him.
Yes, sir, he does indeed. We all have orders to obey him, though we see him seldom. He mostly comes and goes by the street door and at night, sir.
Well... Tell Dr. Jekyll I'd like to see him as soon as possible and give him these papers, will you, Poole?
Yes.
I was talking with him about them a few days ago.
Yes, sir.
Good night, Poole.
Good night, Mr. Utterson.
The sword, Mr. Hyde. Hurry.
Mix it well. Pour the powder in slowly. Now, drink it. Look, the strength of good, Mr. Hyde. The triumphant strength of good. Watch your face. The terror of your eyes unclouding. Straightening of your crooked, evil soul. The masking of an ugly idol in the glass. It's the last of you, Mr. Hyde. You'll never exist again.
What? Is that you, Dr. Jekyll?
Yes, Poole.
I'm so sorry, sir. I only just told Mr. Utterson that you were not at home.
I came in by the laboratory door, Poole.
But Mr. Hyde, sir...
Mr. Hyde is gone.
Oh, I see. Mr. Utterson left this paper envelope, sir. He asked also to see you as soon as possible.
Well, thank you, Poole. Put it there.
Shall I bring you some chocolate, sir?
No. No, I'll go to bed. I'm very tired, Pooh. I've been alone too much lately. What do you say to my taking your advice and having that dinner party?
Oh, that would be like old times, sir.
We'll talk it over tomorrow.
Splendid, sir.
And, Pooh, I don't think Mr. Hyde will be back again.
I think that's the first portion of The Weird Circle from 1945, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. We'll get back to it in just a few minutes, but first, these words.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Okay, we're listening to The Weird Circle with Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, a classic mystery and sort of a science fiction mystery, right? Because because Dr. Jekyll becomes Mr. Hyde. Do you remember who played him in the movie, the very famous movie that was probably in the early 1940s? Spencer Tracy played him.
Only because I just looked it up, only because we were looking up Jekyll and Hyde, but yeah.
I'll never forget that movie. I remember watching it probably a couple times on Creature Feature. Remember Creature Feature?
Absolutely.
They had all of the scary movies on Creature Feature, and that was produced, I believe, right here on WGN television.
Yep.
And
it was on Channel 32.
It was on Channel 9.
I thought it was on Charity 2.
No, because later, I think you're thinking of Sven Gulli. He did all that.
I know Sven,
but Creature Feature was on Channel 9, and there were two voices to the opening. There was like that. It was a picture of Lon Chaney, like as the vampire, and then there was two guys that did the voiceover: Carl Grayson, and I believe Marty McNeely. Also, those were the two guys that worked at WGN Television back then, and they would kind of go back and forth doing the. There was like a poem at the beginning.
Right. Yeah.
To a very scary bum, 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 bum. Maybe we can find that. We'll play it later. And I believe that was, I'm trying to think of the name of that song. I think it was something called like Something in Terror. And it was by.
Yeah, we'll look it up.
Yeah.
We'll find it.
Something, Midnight in Terror or something like that was the name of the song. But we'll play it because remember that song?
Of course.
So,
look it up.
Creature
right now.
Feature.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's get back to Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde on The Weird Circle.
Good evening. Come right in, sir.
Dr. Lanyon and Miss Julie, come in.
Hello, Jekyll. Good to see you out of that shell after all these months. This isn't going to be one of those stuffy dinner parties, is it?
Pay no attention to him, Dr. Jekyll.
Your hat and coat, Dr. Lanyon.
Oh, yes, Poole. By the way, Jekyll.
Yes.
This is your walking stick, isn't it?
Why, well, so it is.
You went off with mine the last time you were over. Left yours.
Did I? I am sorry. Look for Dr. Lanyon's cane, will you, Poole?
Yes, sir. Of course, I'd rather have this one. I'm fond of canes and sherry. A little dog's head is nicely carved.
Well, perhaps we'll arrange a swap someday.
Well, Dr. Jekyll, good evening.
Good, Sir Andrew.
Hello there.
Where have you been hiding all these weeks?
Hiding? Right here, Sir Andrew, right here.
Well, we've missed you. Mrs. Fielding's dinners aren't the same without Dr. Jekyll.
Well, thank you, sir.
It's good to see you, Jekyll.
Utterson,
hello. You're not evading me this time. Been trying to see you all week.
Why, something on your mind?
Not here, old fellow. Come along. We can steal out a few minutes before dinner.
But only a few. I've got a house full of guests, remember. Look, there's nobody here in the laboratory. Sit down. By the fire.
My word. It does look like you've been working.
Well, it takes a lot of equipment for chemical experiments. Now, what's up?
You should know without asking. That will, of course.
Oh, that.
I don't like it, Jekyll.
You never did.
And especially since I've met your Mr. Hyde. He's a fighter fellow, Jekyll. The other night...
Let's not talk about it, Utterson. It's not as you fancy. I can be rid of Hyde the moment I choose.
What's the matter?
I was just going to say, let's leave the will as it is. And will you promise me one thing?
What's that?
I still take a great interest in Hyde, and I only ask for justice for... You to help him if the time comes when I'm no longer here.
The whole thing's preposterous, but... Well, it's a promise. Yes. I'll do my best. Well, look here, Jekyll. Are you ill?
No. No, I... But...
Your face, man. Your face...
Don't look at me, Alison.
Jekyll, wait a minute.
He saw you, Mr. Hyde. My eyes... Let me alone. Let me alone. You've got to die and stay dead forever. You're afraid, Mr. Hyde. Afraid of him. Can you kill the strongest force in the world? You've got to have the strength of Hyde to murder, the inordinate strength of Hyde. You can't kill me, Jekyll. The good in you can never kill. And I shall never die. Not as long as you can live.
What's the matter with you?
Oh, Miss Julie, close the window. Close the window, quick.
Well, what happened?
That hideous creature we heard about, ma'am, that Mr. Hyde, I just saw him kill a man.
Kill a man? Where?
In the street, just outside. I screamed, and he looked up at me like a wild man he was. Oh, no, no, don't go out there, Miss Julie.
Anna, get yourself in hand.
Julie, what's going on here?
Something on the street, Father. You better go out and see what's happened.
Oh, the creature was about to come up to the balcony, Dr. Lanyon. It was stupid.
Put her on the bed, Julia. I'll be right back.
I've just been sitting here peaceful-like, watching the moonlight, ever since you and Dr. Lanyon came back from Dr. Jekyll's party. Then the white-haired gentleman came along, and this monster... Oh,
it's all right, Anna.
And the white-haired gentleman just asked about the pulse, and this monster struck him with his cane, and then kicked him and kicked
Anna.
Him. It was that Hyde monster, Miss Julia.
But where'd he go?
Well, when I screamed, some people came out from the houses and he looked round like an animal and then ran away. Oh, he might come back, Miss Julia. Don't let him come back. Don't let him come back.
Here, get back there. What's happened?
The poor blighter, such an old man. He's been murdered, Dr. Lanyon.
Good Lord. It's Sir Andrew Carew.
Looks like he was on his way to the post and some madman attacked him.
Here are you. Call an officer.
Already been called. Look at this.
What is it?
A walking cane. What the murder was done with, most likely. It's broke plumb in two.
Here, let me see that.
Heavy sort of cane. Easy to do a murder with that.
How terrible. Some maniac's done this.
That Mr. Hyde we've heard so much about, and some folks have seen. That's who's done it.
Oh, it's Mr. Hyde.
Sherry Kane, with a dog's head carved in the handle. Why, this is Dr. Jekyll's.
Clark, let me have a room. Any room, quick.
Yes, sir, right away.
And I want a note delivered immediately.
Will you register, sir?
There's the time, I tell you. Give me a room and send me a messenger, quick.
But,
hey,
sir,
you fool!
Do you want these fingers around your throat, or will you do as I say?
Oh, yes, sir, yes, sir. Sam, show this gentleman up to 210 and wait for a note he wants delivered. Oh, my word, fingers around my throat. And by golly, I really meant it.
I cannot impress upon you too strongly the importance of this note, Dr. Lanyon. You have been a dear friend, and now my life is in your hands. Go immediately to my house. Poole will admit you. From my laboratory cabinet, remove the fourth drawer from the top, with all its contents intact, and take it to your house, where a man will present himself in my name at exactly midnight tonight. You must not fail me. Henry Jekyll. What an extraordinary thing. Well, I've done as Jekyll said. Now we'll see. Oh, right on the dot. Who's there?
This way.
Are you from Jekyll?
Yes. Let me in.
Lanyon, you got it.
I have, but look here.
I don't waste time. We have the drawer.
It's in my study, through that door there.
Where is it?
There, on the table.
Have you got a graduated glass?
It's on the shelf beside you, but what are you going to do?
I am going to perform a miracle.
Now, look here. Jekyll didn't say anything about... If this is some fiendish thing Jekyll's cooked up, I'll be no partner to it.
Crystals. Swords.
Who are you, anyway?
Look at it, Dr. Lanyon.
Man, answer me. Who are you?
You've already guessed that, haven't you? I am Mr. Hyde.
Hyde,
is your curiosity great enough to watch me drink this potion?
What are you talking about? Get out of here, you devil!
If you watch me, a new knowledge will be open to you, Dr. Lanyon. And in this room, this instant, your sight will be blasted by a prodigy that would stagger the unbelief of Satan himself.
You're a madman. Get out of my house.
Now, watch, Dr. Lanyon, watch.
Jekyll. Jekyll. In heaven's name.
It's you. The birth of a good man before your eyes. Now you see why I hid myself away all those weeks, Dr. Lanyon.
Jekyll, what are you saying?
At first it took a strong draught of the formula to bring him to life. Weeks ago, that was. But now he's too strong. Now the Jekyll you see before you hasn't the power to keep him back. 2 hours from now, Dr. Lanyon, I'll be Mr. Hyde again. And no strength of my will can stop it.
Jekyll, you're mad. Leave me alone.
I've got more of the powder, Dr. Lanyon. In heaven's name, don't you see? I've got to find more of the powder. This was the last of it.
Jekyll, have mercy. Let an old man alone.
Together we can do it, Dr. Lanyon. Poole got the powder for me, but the shop where he got it has no more. It must have contained some impurity that did the trick. You've got to help me find out what that impurity was, Dr. Lanyon. You've got to help me murder this evil Hyde in my soul.
Jekyll.
Stop. Why?
Stop.
Dr. Lanyon. Dr. Lanyon! His heart cannot stand the wonder of your miracle, Dr. Jekyll. You have killed him. The one man who could save your life. He's dead. Oh, God bless you, Mr. Addison, for coming so quickly.
Oh, what on earth's happened, Paul?
I'm sorry, afraid Dr. Jekyll's been murdered, sir.
What? Murdered?
Come with me, sir. Don't make a noise. We mustn't be heard.
But where are you taking me?
Here's a candle, sir, to Dr. Jekyll's laboratory. And if by any chance he asks you in, don't go, Mr. Addison. Don't go.
But how could Jekyll be dead?
Quiet, sir, I beg of you. You see, he's been in the laboratory all day, and he won't come out. And every time I knock... Wait, and you shall see. Here's the door.
What is it?
Mr. Addison, sir, asking to see you.
Tell him I can't see anybody.
Yes, sir.
Poor, that isn't... Well, that doesn't sound like Jekyll to me.
No, sir, I'm glad to hear you say so, because Mr. Addison, whatever is in there, cries to heaven for help and wails and sobs.
What are you driving at, Paul?
Well, sir, it all began early this morning after they'd found Dr. Lanyon dead.
Yes, yes, I saw him. Such terror in his face.
Well, sir, it was sometimes Dr. Jekyll's way to leave orders on a sheet of paper outside this door. And since early this morning, sir, we've had nothing else except notes at a closed door and food left outside to be smuggled in when nobody was looking. And a dozen times, Mr. Addison, those notes were sent me flying all over London to wholesale chemists for a certain powder. But every time soon after I brought it back, there'd be another paper telling me to return it because it wasn't right, sir. And this drug, sir, is wanted very badly.
Then maybe it is Jekyll, Poole. Maybe...
Oh, sir, do you think I wouldn't know my master after 20 years? That thing in there, Mr. Addison, had done away with Dr. Jekyll.
Then who do you think it is in there?
I give you my Bible word, Mr. Addison. It's that monster, Mr. Hyde.
Oh, that's what I thought. Come on, we've got to break in.
Yes, sir.
We need an axe, something to pry the door with.
Well, I have the tools here. I've also taken the liberty of sending a footman with the boy around by the by-street entrance, just in case. And I have a gun here, sir.
Good. Can they catch him if he tries to escape?
They can, sir. Here's the axe.
Here, hold the candle.
Right.
I'm going to knock first.
Right.
Mr. Hyde, will you let me in?
I can't see anybody. Go away.
If you don't open the door, I'm going to break it down.
Utterson, in heaven's name, have mercy. Leave me alone.
Oh, stand back.
Yes. If you value your life, stay away.
We're coming in there, Mr. Hyde.
No. If you break down the door, I'll kill you. Do you hear me? I'll kill you. No. It's Utterson, wait. I'll unlock the door.
Give me that gun, Poole.
The door's unlocked. Open it and come in if you dare.
Stand behind me, Poole. I'm going to push it open.
Oh, it's the monster. Mr. Addison has got a knife.
Stay back from us, Mr. Hyde.
Here you see evil incarnate, Mr. Addison. And murder is my forte.
So you have murdered Dr. Jekyll?
Because he wished me dead. Now both of you shall die.
He's coming at us, sir.
Stay back,
now,
Mr. Hyde.
Addison, look out.
Now.
Is he dead, sir?
He's dead, Paul.
Then we must find Dr. Jekyll. His body must be here somewhere in the laboratory.
Wait. Look.
His face. It's changing, sir. It's...
You're looking at the shell of an evil soul, Pool, dissolving, turning back to the form of its creator.
But it's Dr. Jekyll. What does it mean, Mr. Addison?
It means the evil man is dead, Pool. For here lies the better half of his duality. Triumphant.
There you have it. That is The Weird Circle with Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde from 1945 by Robert Louis Stevenson.